Gail King. Welcome to CBS Mornings on the Go. Ahead on this Thursday, June 25th, we've got breaking news. Two back-to-back earthquakes in Venezuela. The death toll is already high, and people think it's going to go higher. The country's president expects it to increase. We'll have the latest on the rescue efforts, and we're going to talk with a witness who, listen to this, was in an elevator when the first quake hit. Yikes. We also got a preview of the World Cup action with Charlie Davies. He's of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network. That includes the U.S. men's team, who are set to play Turkey tonight. Who are you rooting for? USA, of course. And here on the set, we're going to be joined by Kim Merstein and her grandma, Gail. Her real name is Gail Rudnick, from their hit podcast. It's called Excuse My Grandma. Started during the pandemic when Kim, in her 20s, moved in with her grandmother, who lived in Florida at the time. The podcast is filled with humor, heart, and we think you'll enjoy meeting them. All that and more just ahead. We're going to begin with this. We've got breaking news. You've heard about it. Heartbreaking scenes from Venezuela. After not one but two catastrophic earthquakes back to back, less than a minute apart, at least 160 people are dead, more than 900 hurt. Rescuers are climbing through dozens of collapsed buildings, searching for survivors. Unfortunately, the death toll is expected to go higher. Lilia Luciano is here with the latest. Lilia, good morning. What's the latest?
Well, Gail, good morning. This is horrific. Venezuelan President Delcy Rodriguez has declared a state of emergency, saying the focus right now is on saving as many lives as possible. But she also said she expects the death toll to rise. These twin earthquakes are among the strongest to strike the country in a century. They were felt across Venezuela and even as far as Brazil's Amazon region, about 1,000 miles away. They damaged and closed the country's main airport, Simon Bolivar International, near Caracas. Dozens of buildings collapsed, electric poles toppled down, and debris blocked many of the streets. Parts of the capital lost power and cell phone signal. Rodriguez also announced that subway and natural gas services are suspended in Caracas. Some witnesses described the chaos as a scene out of a horror movie. Overnight, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said the U.S. is deploying search and rescue teams, medical resources, and humanitarian aid to Venezuela. A State Department official tells CBS News Rubio called the Venezuelan president and offered the full assistance of the United States. Matt.
Truly devastating, and our thoughts are with all the people in Venezuela. Lilia, thank you very much.
We are joined now by a witness to this tragedy, journalist Tony Frangi-Mawad. Think about this. He was in an elevator in Caracas when the first earthquake hit. Tony, thank you so much. Listen, it is terrifying just looking at the pictures when you can see what's going on. Set the scene for us. You're in an elevator. What happens? What are you thinking?
Thank you, Gail. It was actually quite terrifying. I was to head to see the World Cup match with my friends because it was a holiday. It was a free day in Caracas. Everybody was in their homes or just outside of work or school. And when I just headed out of my home and took the elevator, I felt that moving and then moving really fast. So at first I thought it was malfunctioning, but then my friend who was with me tells me that it's probably an earthquake. And we just hope for the best. And I started to pray and to press every button, waiting for it to open up until the elevator actually arrived to the latest basement of the building and open up. So that's when I went outside and I saw my own building shaking. Thankfully, my building was built after the last earthquake that hit Caracas in 1967. So it actually resisted quite strongly. Mm. And I went outside into the garden and just waited there for a few hours as all my neighbors and family came down and met in the garden.
Tony, I'm surprised that the elevators kept moving. So the elevator opens, you go outside. Describe to us what exactly you saw.
I just saw the parking lot of the whole building just moving from side to side, and everything was shaking. There was also a bit of rain at the moment. And I just ran outside, and some of the lids that were over the lights of the parking lot were falling to the ground. And then I saw just neighbors coming out into the gardens of the building. So at first, I kind of thought that it was just a sort of strong yet normal small quake like the ones we tend to feel in Caracas. But when I finally managed to connect myself to some Wi-Fi signal because the phone carriers collapsed at the moment, I saw the first messages saying that, in fact, some buildings in Caracas and then, of course, outside of Caracas had collapsed. And that's when we started to understand the magnitude of what was going on in the city and throughout the country.
I know from covering earthquakes, one of the scariest things in the wake of an earthquake are the aftershocks. Are you feeling any aftershocks? And what are you hearing from friends and family who perhaps are looking for loved ones?
So thankfully, all my friends and family are okay, but throughout social media, there's hundreds of posts and stories and WhatsApp messages of people looking for loved ones, especially in La Guaira, which is a coastal town outside of Caracas. So that's probably the most heartbreaking thing at the moment, the big amount of just content on social media of people looking for the loved ones at the moment. Regarding the aftershocks, most of them were really mild until 1 a.m. in the morning last night, when we actually felt a strong one. And then it was just a very strange scene because we could hear just the macaws and the parrots singing and screaming through the morning because they woke up to the movement. So it was a
Boy.
really eerie setting.
Boy, Tony, thank you so much. We keep hearing about the death toll and it's expected to go higher. Are you looking at your life differently now today?
Well, the whole week just changed for completely. I was actually graduating from my MBA on Friday, that definitely suspended. So now I'm just waiting for the news and trying to see how I can help and move around to help survivors.
All
We
right.
now know it's at least 161 casualties, but we expect it to be far higher, especially in La Guaira, which is a coastal town outside of Caracas, where the airport is located, where we've seen videos of tens of buildings just collapsing and there's a never-ending amount of content of people looking for families in La Guaira
Yes.
and relatives. So yeah,
Tony,
we expect it to get worse.
thank you so much for taking the time. I know you got a lot of stuff to do right now, but we really appreciate and glad that you have survived. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Turning to Europe, where the country of Albania has been rocked by weeks of protests, sparked by a project backed by President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. The demonstrators are angry about his plans for a luxury resort in a protected area known for its natural beauty and about alleged corruption in Albania's government. Lee Canary has the story.
In the small Balkan country of Albania, people are calling for a revolution. A flamingo revolution. It began as a dispute between environmental groups against developers on this wild Mediterranean coastline called Zvernech, home to thousands of flamingos. The investors in the development of this land include President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner.
I think
Ivanka Trump spoke about the project in a recent interview.
Over the course of many years, we developed the opportunity to help realize its potential and transform it, but with a lot of restraint and care because the land is so beautiful.
Bulldozers at the site last month caused outrage. Activists clashed with security guards, and protests spilled into the streets.
If I was in the United States and they were to make a five-star resort at the Grand Canyon, I would be very upset because it's a national treasure.
But dissent over the deal quickly morphed into something more.
All Albanians together are coming together to protest against corrupted regime.
Thousands demanding complete overhaul of a government they say is corrupt. Starting with the resignation of Socialist Prime Minister Edi Rama, who's been in power for nearly 13 years.
This is a blessing for the country.
Rama has said the $4 billion investment is above board. The structure of the deal is complex. Filings reviewed by CBS News show the company representing investors, Sazan Real Estate Development, was initially formed in Qatar and is linked to multiple shell companies registered to the Netherlands.
These structures tend to obscure ultimate ownership of the entities and involved.
Lawyer Fraser Mitchell is an expert in offshore disputes and investigations.
So I see it in both parties' interests here to be as transparent as possible about where the money is coming from, who the ultimate owners are, and how it's going to benefit the people of Albania.
We contacted Kushner's investment firm, but the company behind the development, Sazan Real Estate, replied. They told us the project will benefit the people of Albania through creating jobs and celebrating the country's natural beauty, but added the development's future will ultimately be determined by the Albanian people. Vlad?
All right, Lee Canaire reporting from London for us. Lee, thank you very much.
7:30 around here means one thing. Thursday, Tom Hansen. Also known as Tom Hanks.
Oh, come on.
Although we met his parents, and his parents call you Tommy. So, Tommy, what's on your mind for what caught your eye?
Gail,
You can call me whatever you want as long as you just call, all right? Good morning to you, and Vlad and Matt, good morning to you as well. Well, we begin with some stunning footage of a massive fire in Pennsylvania. The six-alarm fire started Wednesday evening at a large commercial building in Allentown. You can see it burning there. Officials asked some nearby residents to evacuate and others to shelter in place. So far, authorities say no injuries have been reported, thankfully. There's no word yet on what sparked the flames. All right, moving on now to Detroit Lions quarterback Terrion Arnold. He has been taken into custody in connection with a robbery and kidnapping case. Get a look at this. Tampa Bay police say Arnold was allegedly behind a plot to retaliate against three men he suspected of robbing his Airbnb. Now, authorities say Arnold and multiple associates lured the victims to an apartment where they were held at gunpoint and pistol whipped. Arnold was reportedly not present, but watched via live stream. Representatives for Arnold deny his involvement. He faces four counts of kidnapping and four counts of armed robbery and a potential maximum sentence of life in prison. Some serious charges there. Turning now to some scary moments on an Air Canada flight. Take a listen to this.
The flight is being manned by the co-pilot. The pilot is incapacitated.
Gosh, a flyer's worst nightmare. This happened Wednesday afternoon. The plane was headed to Halifax, Canada from Newark, New Jersey. When the captain experienced a medical emergency, the co-pilot took over, thankfully diverting the flight to Boston's Logan Airport. After landing safely, the pilot was met by an ambulance and taken off the plane. Authorities say he was transported to the hospital where he's being treated. There's no word on his condition. Just so important for the redundancy in those pilots. Thank God for the co-pilot there. All right, turning finally to a small Texas town that is on the lookout for a missing resident that shouldn't be hard to spot. Gracie, the giraffe, escaped from a ranch in Leakey about a week and a half ago. Now on Facebook, her owner says she's between 3 to 4 years old, about 11 feet tall, and has rounded ears. So, guys, if you spot a giraffe with pointed ears, important to note here, right, it is not her. A reward of $5,000 is being offered. Thank God for that delineation because of all of the giraffes just roaming around Texas, guys.
How is she still missing?
Can you describe the giraffe?
Truly, I hope she's brought home safely because I fear the other outcome here.
Oh,
guys,
giraffes are so.
What's the other outcome?
The other outcome is that maybe the wilderness got her. It's hill country, guys.
I mean, what kind of coyote's going to mess with a giraffe?
Who knows?
I don't know.
Oh, boy.
Please keep us updated.
Yeah.
We want Gracie to be okay.
Gracie watches
back
on.
Home and
yes, bring Gracie home.
Thank you so much, Tommy. Now to one of the most anticipated pop culture events of the year. You know what we're talking about. Music superstar Taylor Swift's wedding to NFL superstar Travis Kelce. So details of the big day, as you know, are being kept under wraps. But that hasn't stopped the rumors from swirling. Everybody has an opinion, and we don't know nothing. The New York Times is reporting the wedding may happen at the world's most famous arena. That would be Madison Square Garden. So guess who's there? Kelly O'Grady. Kelly, have you seen them? Good morning.
I've been looking everywhere, Gail, but not here yet, right? But we're just a little over a week away from that rumored Swift-Kelce wedding. And new reporting, as you said, could take place right here at Madison Square Garden. The arena, it's already home to the Rangers, the Knicks, countless concerts, but it could add a celebrity wedding to that lineup.
It's been a long time coming, girl. After months of speculation, the wedding of superstar Taylor Swift Kansas City Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce is rumored to be just days away.
Yes.
The New York Times reports a permit has been filed by a prominent event planning company to close streets around Madison Square Garden for an event July 4th weekend, with one city official reportedly telling the paper the venue is planning to host the wedding. It comes after weeks of speculation, fueled in part by Swift appearing at the Knicks Game 4 and New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani hinting the event may take place over the upcoming holiday weekend.
July 4th, America 250, Taylor Swift's wedding all happening at the same time.
Swift has ties to New York with an apartment downtown and has written about the city in several songs. Third floor on the west side, me and you. Madison Square Garden sits in the center of it all, with no windows and secluded entrances that could provide the pair with privacy.
If they do something at Madison Square Garden, there is no better place to bring sports and entertainment together.
Rosemarie Terenzio helped plan John F. Kennedy Jr. and Carolyn Bessette's remote 1996 wedding.
I can't imagine with the amount of people that come in and out of MSG, and it's New York City, that it wouldn't somehow get out.
I'll be there.
Fellow NFL tight end George Kittle told Entertainment Tonight Tuesday that he and his wife were invited to the wedding, but said even they don't know the details.
Is it MSG?
I have no idea.
We don't know.
I actually asked Travis last night, and he laughed at me, so...
Swifties say they're just as confused.
Do I buy it? I'm not sure.
I think maybe it is a ploy to get people to come here, and then on her real wedding day, it's private, which is family and friends.
Now, Kittle also said that the couple requested absolutely no gifts for their wedding. And the New York Times is also reporting that several Kansas City Chiefs players have booked hotel rooms around Times Square for around July 3rd. But guys, I'm just going to say it. My English teacher, my gym teacher get married at MSG. That's an ending to this love story that does not make me say yes, okay?
I think whatever they decide, Kelly, honestly, we're all caught up in it. No one asked me, but I pictured a beautiful garden, lots of flowers. But you can make anything possible in Madison Square Garden. They have the money to do whatever they want to do. You just want them to have a great day.
Plus the beer and the hot dogs.
That's right.
Right?
How do you buy a gift for them? How do you, if they,
well, that's
well
why
apparently
they said
you
no
don't.
Gifts.
I know, but no like gifts. If you were buying one, what would you, like, I don't know.
I'm also confused about how much this must cost. Like, this is not a regular wedding venue.
Yeah, but.
All right. Yeah. Kelly, thank you so much. Up ahead, a lot of excitement today for the U.S. men's national team in the World Cup. We'll have a preview from outside the stadium where they'll play. This is CBS Mornings.
Welcome back to CBS Mornings. This morning, we're taking a deeper dive into what appears to be rising support for democratic socialism in this country. That includes the election of politicians like New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani, who won office convincingly after running on a democratic socialist platform. Mamdani endorsed three candidates in congressional primaries here in New York City. And this week, all three won. So if you are wondering exactly what the democratic socialist platform is, our Ed O'Keefe has some answers.
We are showing there is a new path for politics in our city and in our country.
With his allies' primary wins Tuesday, New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani said a new path is being paved by democratic socialism. It's nothing new, but its more recent revival is often linked to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who framed it this way when he first ran for president.
Democratic socialism means that we must reform a political system which is corrupt, that we must create an economy that works for all, not just the very wealthy.
In New York, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez calls herself a democratic socialist. So do two of the congressional candidates Mamdani supported, Claire Valdez and Daria Lisa Avila Chevalier. There's also Janice Lewis George, the likely next mayor of Washington, D.C., and Nithya Raman, the Los Angeles councilwoman running to unseat Democratic Mayor Karen Bass. Other Democratic Socialist congressional or gubernatorial candidates are on the ballot this year in Colorado, Michigan, and Wisconsin. They broadly support universal health care and greater housing affordability.
We have to have a more affordable city if people are going to stay here.
Less restrictive immigration controls.
I will lead the fight against ISIS cruelty.
More environmental protections. Reduced U.S. military budgets, and support ending military and economic aid to Israel.
That we pay to care for our people instead of the flattening of Palestinians and oppressed people abroad is not a radical act.
For CBS Mornings, I'm Ed O'Keefe.
All right, so let's continue the discussion. For more on this, we're joined by Raihan Salam. He is president of the Manhattan Institute, that is a center-right urban policy think tank. He's also a contributor to the Free Press and a lifelong New Yorker. Mm-hmm. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you. So we just heard from prominent Democratic socialists about the issues that they care about. Generally, those issues are around stronger tenant protections, more publicly built housing, higher taxes on top earners, expanded childcare. expanded public transportation. Why do you think that the DSA platform keeps resonating? I mean, Bernie Sanders got millions of votes when he was running for president.
Well, look, the really important thing that happened in New York City is that every establishment Democrat who was defeated agreed on the substance of those issues. There was something very different going on, which is that the party itself is very institutionally weak. It's hollowed out. And now you have a movement with a ton of youth, a ton of energy that is using that discipline, that organizational prowess to bring candidates who have those views, but also much more breathtakingly extreme views and bringing them to the fore.
Like what? Like what breathing?
Well, for example, if you're looking at foreign policy, these are folks who believe in the abolition of borders. They believe in prison abolition. When you're pressing these candidates, for example, Daria Lisa Avila Chevalier, when you really press her on these issues, she said that, hey, I said a lot of radical things back in 2020, but I talk about things differently now. But when pressed by local journalists, do you believe that anyone ought to go to prison? Is there anyone at all who should be deported? This is someone who is very forthright in saying, no, I really take a firm stance against borders. I take a firm stance against what she sees as U.S. imperialism and against our allies. She took a firm stance against backing Ukraine in its struggle for survival against Russia. That is a very different view from most mainstream Democrats.
Let's concentrate on the election that just happened.
Of course.
Because how big is the movement? When you talk about the turnout, how big was the turnout? Help us understand how big this movement is for this last election.
It's so important to understand. If you're looking at these congressional districts, for example, the district in Upper Manhattan and the Bronx, this is a district that has 500,000 registered voters.
How many people voted?
Only 70,000 folks voted in this election that will essentially determine who goes to Congress. And of those 70,000...
So is that a movement, Ryan? If you have that many people and only that small amount voted, is that a movement?
Well, here's the thing. If you have a small, disciplined, organized minority that really knows what it wants and is able to apply that energy and those resources, that small, organized minority can seize the larger brand. And that's what we're seeing here.
Rayon, there seems to be some tension in the Democratic Party. Mainstream Democrats want to be more moderate. And then there is this leftward shift that is galvanizing young people and creating this kind of organization that you're saying we haven't seen in a long time. So what happens with this tension?
It's really challenging. I think part of this is that we have such a polarized national climate. You know, it's no secret that President Trump is not very popular right now. And there are a lot of Democrats who don't share the DSA's views, but who feel as though the Democratic Party is too weak. They're not fighting enough. So to some extent, it's almost like Trump voters who felt that, hey, I don't agree with him on every issue, but he's showing energy and strength and vitality. What the DSA is doing right now, in its militancy, they're showing strength and vitality, and that's capturing a lot of that resistance energy, which is why some DSA candidates or some candidates aligned with them are doing well in suburbs, not just in deep blue urban neighborhoods in those primaries.
The rhetoric around socialism tends to sometimes scare a lot of people. These people who are supporting some of these policies, they're doing it within a democratic constitutional system. They're not advocating for governments based on one-party rule or a centralized state ownership of the economy or suppression of political opposition or even limits on civil liberties. So could that translate the things that they advocate? Perhaps not what you mentioned earlier, but some of those other things that we talked about, greater public investment, expanded childcare. Is that something that could resonate across the
country? Well, here's where I would frame things a little differently. The overall mainstream Democratic Party has moved to the left on the welfare state. They've moved to the left on many of those issues you've mentioned. The really distinctive thing that's going on here is a very tight focus on foreign policy, opposition to AIPAC, an organization that is a pro-Israel organization, and frankly, the demonization of a lot of folks who have these more traditional, more mainstream foreign policy views. So on those issues you're talking about, hey, let's make America a little bit more like Denmark or Sweden, those are very mainstream views that were held by the opponents of these DSA candidates. Mm-hmm. The real thing is that energy around so-called U.S. imperialism, backing Cuba, backing the, you know, Maduro government back when it was in power in Venezuela. So this is a different kind of energy.
Very interesting. We'll be watching that energy. Ryan Salam, thank you very much. A beautiful day is forecast in Los Angeles today, where the U.S. will play Turkey in the Men's World Cup. Nicole Valdez is in Los Angeles. Hey, Nicole, good morning. A lot of people are feeling pretty good about this team.
Hey, Matt, good morning. You could say they're feeling optimistic as thousands hope to see another great performance by this already dominant team. Now, the pressure's off for today's match, so you could expect to see some of the well-known stars resting today, giving other players on this 26-man roster their chance to shine.
Under the sunny skies of Southern California, America's World Cup dreams are sparkling. The U.S. men's national team, fresh off wins against Paraguay and Australia, are entering tonight's match knowing they're already through to the next round, but the job is far from over.
Just because we're through doesn't mean we have to let our foot off the pedal. We have to keep on going with that same confidence, same rhythm.
Their opponent, Turkey, has already been eliminated. Still, the U.S. wants to keep the momentum going.
I think we're all aware that it's not going to be an easy game. Obviously, they have quality players.
And then there's the matter of Captain America's injured left calf. Christian Pulisic sat out the last match against Australia.
Everything is a lot easier when the team's winning, and it's just been fun to support. And now just to be back, feeling positive.
He returned to practice this week, hoping to play tonight.
That winning mentality feeling is just, it sticks with you, so you want it. You want it for sure. Going into the knockout rounds, we'll definitely feel better with a win.
Paul Tenorio is a senior soccer writer for The Athletic.
You need to get that rhythm back before the knockout, and you want to get some game minutes under those legs. I think it's really important to get Christian Pulisic minutes, and how long he plays, well, that we don't know, because we just don't know what the status of his calf is fully. Is he ready to go for a half an hour? Is he ready to go for 55 or 60 minutes? We'll see whether he starts or comes off the bench.
With the star forward hoping to keep the team's good vibes flowing in a match that means nothing and everything.
It's all about storylines, right? It's about the idea of what story are you telling the country? And right now the story has been, this is a winning team, this is a fun team, get behind us.
Now, a win today would mark the first time ever the U.S. men have won all three group stage matches in a World Cup, period. So we're definitely looking forward to seeing that. It all kicks off at 10 o'clock Eastern. Vlad.
All right, go USA. Nicole, thank you very much.
Our series USA to Z celebrates 250 years of American history and culture. Today is X for Xenia. It's a small city in Ohio that was devastated by a tornado more than 50 years ago. In less than 10 minutes, much of the town was destroyed, but the community rebounded and rebuilt. Mark Strassman visited Xenia, a town that has become a symbol of American perseverance.
All in ruins.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there was nothing that they could salvage.
Mike Anderson brought us to this empty lot. It's a monument to calamity. Xenia, Ohio's destroyed high school once stood here. The former assistant track coach and several dozen students watched an ominous black cloud draw closer.
When did you realize, uh-oh, we're in trouble here?
As soon as I saw the tornadoes, they said, look at those birds flying around. And I said, guys, that's not birds, that's debris. And so I said, we better get inside.
April 3rd, 1974, a massive, rare F5 tornado hurtled into view. 1 mile wide, winds greater than 300 miles per hour. And X marked the bullseye, X for Xenia.
When you see a funnel coming at you, it gets your attention pretty quickly.
Ohio Governor Mike DeWine was a 27-year-old assistant prosecutor hiding in the basement of an office building. He took these damage images with a Super 8 millimeter film camera.
We knew it was hitting. Yes, you can certainly hear it. It was all dark, and everybody's kind of holding on to everybody, and really thought this could be the end.
One of the worst tornadoes in U.S. history pancaked this community of 25,000 people. More than 3,200 buildings, about half the city, destroyed or heavily damaged. President Nixon toured the landscape of rubble, stunned.
How are you?
Good.
I'm doing all right.
This is Market Street, the heart of downtown, where the F5 tornado came barreling through. Like so much of the area, this side of the street was mostly destroyed. But on this side, one of the only buildings the tornado could not budge, the Greene County Courthouse.
And I remember thinking, this is a bleepin' war zone.
Ohio State Judge Mike Buckwalter, then 17, remembers walking outside into eerie quiet.
Hundreds, if not 1,000 people
faces I saw that were in clinical shock. No one was screaming, no one was crying, no one was yelling, no one was doing anything other than like almost zombified.
32 people in Xenia were killed. 32. Mike Anderson helped save his students by sheltering them in a locker room. His two kids at home also survived. Their house fell down around them.
You lost your house.
Yes.
You lost the building where you worked. But you feel lucky.
We were lucky, you know, because there were 32 other families that were not so lucky, that lost people.
Rebuilding Xenia took decades. The city became a symbol of Midwest resilience.
Yes, they might be sorrowful about losing a house or maybe even a friend, but the human spirit just was, let's go. Let's go, let's move forward.
A monument downtown marks the lives lost. Some people need no reminder.
Yeah, it's indelible in all our minds.
Even 52 years later.
It will be until I die.
Xenia may never forget. Who could? For CBS Mornings, Mark Strassman in Xenia, Ohio.
What a comeback. And we will be right back.
Here's a question. What happens when you take a grandmother and her lovely granddaughter and mix in a little fashion, relationships, and unsolicited advice? I love unsolicited advice. You can get a hit podcast that's filled with both humor and a whole lot of heart. Kim Merstein and her grandma Gail Rudnick are the hosts behind Excuse My Grandma. So after Merstein moved in with her grandmother during the pandemic, she began recording Rudnick's old school wisdom and blunt relationship advice. Today, they have a very popular podcast, events, a lot of merchandise too, and even a newspaper column. Here's a taste of Excuse My Grandma.
Your soulmate is not someone who makes you cry in an Uber.
Do you like this sweater on me?
No, I think it really is a little old lady looking. I thought it was old lady on me.
This is something I say all the time to people. There is no guarantee. Everything could look great, and then it turns out terrible. If you're going for the guarantee, you might be sorry.
I'm not saying he peaked in high school, but did you see his LinkedIn?
Kim Merstein and Grandma Gail, because that's how they say it when they introduce her. We're glad to say join us in the studio. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. She is everyone's grandma now.
Yes, so. I already fell in love with her, Kim, because when I met her, she goes, I've been watching you for years, and let me just say, you're getting so much better. I love that.
Yes,
I love that. That is Grandma Gail. But the idea for this podcast, I'm assuming, came from your daughter,
my granddaughter.
So what happened?
What a podcast was.
No, I thought it was.
You thought TikTok and TikTok, and you were like getting all the things mixed up. But yeah, I know that she's completely unfiltered. And when I started living with my grandparents during the pandemic, I heard it 24/7, and so I was a consumer of podcasts. And I thought, why don't we start this together and then go on social media together? And we've just made this community of hundreds and thousands of people of all ages.
And it started out as a dating thing, because she was dating during during pandemic. And I used to put the cup to the wall and listen to all the dates coming in. And
did you listen to the dates?
I sort of listened to her comments, because we were doing 6 feet apart, so we weren't on top of each other.
Well, I was also asking you like what every text meant that people were sending. Like, you were very involved.
I was involved. Yeah. I couldn't understand the new dating. It was a whole different world.
A whole different world.
It was a different world.
But I'm fascinated about your relationship as a grandparent, because my biggest wish was that I would live long enough that I'd get to meet my grandchildren and they know me.
Right.
Mine are 4 and 2 and 5 months. So if something happens to me now, they won't know me. But you two really know each other.
Right. Well, we know everything about each other. I mean, you know, at some point we were saying last week we should just move in together, because we're in each other's closet every day. And we're doing things that we both love to do together. We love theater. We love just walking around the city. And, you know, we have such a good time together.
And we were always like that as grandparent, grandchild. But I think not until Excuse My Grandma in the last 5 years have we seen each other as like women and people.
Right.
You're both grown-ass women, and you both can really contribute to each other's lives.
So
you talk a lot about Zach.
Yes.
Her boyfriend, Zach. Do we like Zach?
We like Zach. We liked him better now that he's on the East Coast, not the West Coast.
What did you think about them moving in together? Because you talked a lot about that. Right. He's coming in.
Well, it's a different era. I mean, yes. You know, in the old days, we would have never moved in without being married.
Ring, yes.
A ring wouldn't have even counted. You had to be married. So this has all changed. And my attitudes have changed over the last few years because I understand where young people are going. But I still believe certain things have to go into sequence. So you move in, you get engaged, and you get married. You just don't move in and spend the entire next 20 years living together.
I want to play with you guys because we did a little round, a lightning round here. Inexcusable or excusable?
Cute.
So you got the thing. Okay.
All right.
Two different
things. Ready to go. Splitting the bill on the first date.
Inexcusable.
Inexcusable.
Really?
It's a first date. Whoever asked should be taking care of the bill.
Oh, okay. Because I paid a couple times on first dates.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That would have been the end of that date for me.
Dating someone the same age as your parents.
Oh.
Inexcusable.
Yeah, I think inexcusable also. That's too much.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you.
Yeah.
Bringing a date to a sports bar.
It's excusable
if you both like sports.
Right.
Wearing couples costumes for Halloween.
Excusable. I love that.
Sort of seedy, but tacky, but all right. All right.
Oh, I like it. I like when couples dress alike. Right. I like that. Okay. And I love this. Giving a bad first date a second chance.
Oh, that.
Do you say excusable?
Yes.
Yeah, we like second chances. We don't like third and fourth and fifth.
But even if it's a bad first date, you would still try it again.
Yeah, give it again.
Yeah,
give
it's hard to get try. To know someone from one hour of meeting them.
And tell me the best thing about this relationship for the two of you in one word, in less than two words. Grandma Gail, you go first.
Huh? I'm staying young with it.
Staying young.
Yeah, I'm staying young.
I'm all for that.
Understanding, and I get to get some of your wisdom, which is awesome.
Yeah, wisdom all around. Kim and Gail, we thank you.
Thank you.
The U.S. men's hot start at the World Cup has fans wondering, is this really finally their year? They'll put their undefeated record to the test tonight against Turkey, and they've already earned their spot in the next round. Charlie Davies is a former striker for the team. Now he's an analyst for CBS Sports' Golazo Network and co-host of Call It What You Want podcast. Charlie, good morning.
Yeah,
okay.
Wait, Charlie, before you say anything, Mike Grillo, your co-host, was here last week. He was really good.
Yeah.
Oh, no feel, pressure, though.
Feel no pressure.
Also, Charlie. He threw a little shade, right? He,
yes.
Like, if Charlie can be here.
I've scored in front of 110,000 people.
Woo!
I'm good.
Scoring right now, buddy. Hold on.
Drop the mic.
Yes. It's an ongoing battle between them. It feels like the U.S. kind of walked into this tournament, not the U.S. team, but fans. And suddenly they saw the joy and enthusiasm and the prowess with which the U.S. men's team has been playing. And suddenly everybody's really into it. So against this Turkish team, does the U.S. have a chance? And do we have a chance of going all the way?
For sure we have a chance. And I do expect some rotations. You don't want to risk guys who have yellow cards because then they get suspended for the match that really matters, right? We're talking about the knockout round. So I think it's a fresh match for some of the guys who haven't played. So they get to come in with that enthusiasm, that energy, get their first World Cup minutes to make a difference, and also say, hey, when the knockout round comes, I want to be a part of that too. I want some more playing time. So I do think they're going to come out to continue that momentum, which is so key when we're getting.
Well, they've already won both of their games, but some people are saying, calm down, USA, just because you've won the first two, calm down. But you say with such confidence on your birthday, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
Great present to you.
Thank you.
You say, yes, why do you feel that they actually have a team? Because a lot of people are like, nah.
Well, one, I think this team has come together, and Mauricio Pochettino, the coach, has instilled a belief. I look back 17 years ago, we played Spain in the Confederations Cup semifinal. They hadn't lost in 2 years.
Yeah.
They actually went on to win the World Cup following the Confederations Cup, but it's a semifinal, and we won 2-0.
Oh.
That was one of the greatest teams ever, and we beat them 2-0. And we were up at halftime against Brazil in the final 2-0, and we ended up losing 3-2. But after that tournament, I thought to myself, we could win a World Cup. Why not? If we can compete with the very best. So fast forward now, these guys really have a chance to do something special, and I think they can go further than any U.S. team has ever gone.
I hope so.
Let me ask you about some of the international players. Lionel Messi is now the all-time leading goal scorer in the Men's World Cup. Is the debate over? I mean, Kylian Mbappe is chasing that record. Yeah. You've also got Ronaldo, who's still bringing it after all these years in the game. But talk to me about Messi.
Messi is one of those players that you dream of becoming, but the reality is you could never become him. Because I think what's so fascinating to me is he's small in stature, right? He's not muscular. He doesn't look any different than the normal, you know, person that you'd see walking the street. Except when you get on the field, he becomes Superman.
Wow.
You have some of the biggest, fastest athletes in the world that can't knock him off the ball. The ball literally is glued to his foot, and he's strong, he's quick, and he's
Charlie,
one of the best goal scorers of all time.
It must be nice to feel like Superman. I'm wondering, have you talked to any of the U.S. players?
I have.
What are they saying? Because I wonder how you guys stay focused when the stakes are this high and you know everybody's watching you. Who have you talked to? What are they saying?
Well, I have a great relationship with a lot of the guys, so I think that's something that, I never take for granted. And so Tyler Adams and Matt Turner are really close friends of mine. And I think they've been in high-pressure situations before. I mean, Tyler Adams has played in the World Cup, right? And had to take some really tough questions around Iran and journalists coming at him and just being a leader. So these guys have been in big, big situations in Europe, playing in Champions League. So it's not foreign to them.
All right, Charlie Davis, happy birthday.
Yes.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so
much. Fans can tune in to the free CBS Sports Galazzo Network to hear 24/7 analysis of the World Cup. It's available on CBSSports.com, the CBS Sports app, and on Paramount Plus.
Yes, tell Mike we said hello, and it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
I like his brown shoes. Very nice.
Yeah.